people want to participate, but make it easy to participate. Don't ask me to come out and vote 11 times.
We've created a system where we do it fairly, we do it openly, we do it transparently. We reallocate political power based on what have been the demographic trends, how has the population shifted.
Up until now, the only option for a flower-based product was to obtain it illegally.
Hi there, WAMC News Director Ian Pickus here, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, Republicans in New York are crying foul over the date of a special congressional election. Lawmakers in Western Mass are keeping a close eye on the 2020 U.S. Census, and a dispensary in the Hudson Valley offers a new form of medical marijuana. While it seems increasingly likely that a special election for the Western New York congressional seat vacated by the disgraced Chris Collins will be held the same day as New York's presidential primary in April, and that has Republicans in the state crying foul. Collins resigned his seat in September and pleaded guilty to federal charges of insider trading. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
He was the first congressional representative to support Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign, and he represented the most heavily Republican district in the state. It's up to Governor Andrew Cuomo to decide when the special election to replace Collins should be held. Cuomo has said that he hasn't yet made up his mind on the exact date, but when he's asked about it, he's repeatedly made the case that the April 28th presidential primary would be a good choice. He says it would also save the state money to add the election to an already established voting day. The governor spoke about it most recently on Rochester Public Radio Station, WXXI.
Would you rather have a special election and charge taxpayers $1 million and ask them to come and vote just for Congress, or do it on April 28th when they're also coming out to vote for president? My instinct is do it on April 28th. People want to participate, but make it easy to participate. Don't ask me to come out and vote 11 times. I have other things to do in my life.
But in April, it will be mainly Democrats who will be going to the polls. Several Democratic candidates are running for president, but Trump is not expected to have any serious Republican challengers running in New York State. The head of the state's Republican Party, Nick Langworthy, says that date would unfairly disadvantage the GOP candidate running for the 27th district seat, and he believes Cuomo is doing it on purpose.
I should expect no more from Andrew Cuomo than to try to put his thumb on the scale. Put it on a day where there's no other distractions, where the people can have a legitimate discussion and election based on that seat in Congress. No other distractions. He'll say it's about cost savings. It's about him trying to cheat.
Langworthy says the seat should be filled as soon as possible so that constituents can be represented during a tumultuous time in Washington.
So we're going to let these people go without representation while people are trying to impeach the president until June. It's disrespectful to the taxpayers of that district. Call a special for January.
Cuomo counters that voters of either party would be as likely to turn out on the presidential primary voting day as they would on a separate day just for that seat.
If there's a congressional seat that's important, why wouldn't they show up on April 28th, but they would show up on a special election day? And it costs $1 million to have a special election. What happened to conservatives wanting to reduce government spending?
If the special election were to be held in late April, the governor would need to announce it by early February. The candidates so far are Democrat Nate McMurray, who is supervisor of the town of Grand Island in Erie County. Among the GOP candidates, Robert Ort and Chris Jacobs, who are both Western New York State senators. Cuomo says voters will have a second chance to choose who holds the congressional seat later in 2020 when the general election is held in November. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
With the 2020 U.S. Census due to begin in March, politicians in Berkshire County say an accurate count is vital for Western Massachusetts. We get that story from WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief, Josh Landes.
The next census has been on the minds of Western Massachusetts leaders for months, if not years. Democratic State Senator Adam Hines.
When we're talking about the money that we receive from the federal government, it's based on numbers.
Pittsfield City Clerk Michelle Benjamin.
For every person that is counted, I believe there's over $2,000 in federal funding available.
Second Berkshire District State Representative Paul Mark, a Democrat, chairs the Massachusetts House Committee on Redistricting and represents 16 rural communities in Berkshire and Franklin County.
So as the chair of the House Committee on Redistricting, we've taken a lot of effort to try to support the census. The census is required in the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, and that section says there shall be an enumeration every 10 years, and that enumeration shall be for the purpose of apportionment of seats, of representative seats in Congress. And so at the state level, same thing. The number of seats don't change. We're fixed at 160 and 40 in the Senate. But the way that this political power is reallocated is dependent on these census numbers. And so what we want to make sure, and we're working in coordination with the U.S. Census itself and with Secretary Galvin, Secretary of State for Massachusetts, we're trying to ensure that Massachusetts gets the most accurate and complete count that we can possibly get. I mean, this affects, I believe the number is over $650 billion in state and federal aid. There are hundreds, literally hundreds of state and federal projects that are programs that are dependent upon census numbers. But then again, the apportionment and reallocation of political power. When you think of traditionally around the world, the way that maps have been drawn, the way that boundaries have been drawn, it's been based on warfare, and then we changed all of that here in the United States. We've created a system where we do it fairly, we do it openly, we do it transparently. We reallocate political power based on what have been the demographic trends. How has the population shifted every 10 years? And so as the committee, we want to make sure, again, we get the best numbers. We've secured money in the state budget to help assist Secretary Galvin. Secretary Galvin, there's a grant program available for the first time ever that will allow complete count committees, local organizations, community organizations to apply for funding to help them in their census efforts. And then as a committee, we've helped host, I think, 10 events around the state, all over the state, Cape, locally, Western Massachusetts. We're going to Worcester in a couple of weeks. We're going to New Bedford. We've been up on the North Shore. And we got Amherst, which, believe it or not, is one of the 9 hardest to count communities in all of Massachusetts, probably because of the student population. And so, again, it's just our intention is to make sure the count is complete and accurate, because that way when the census is actually done and those numbers are sent to us, we will be able to draw the most fair and accurate representative, Senate, and U.S. representative districts possible.
Do you foresee any major changes in representation for Western Mass in this coming census?
What we're seeing is that there's a significant amount of population growth in the eastern part of the state. So in Suffolk County alone, which is Boston and I think 3 other communities, the growth is about 11.8% based on the estimates right now. Here in Western Massachusetts, we're looking at either very slow growth or even in some places a small decline. The statewide average is about 5%. So the good news is we shouldn't be in danger of losing a member of Congress because the state as a whole has a good level of growth. But yeah, in Western Massachusetts, if our population isn't keeping up, it means our districts get bigger, which means we take on more communities both at the state level and at the federal level. And the bad news in that is while we always maintain as best we can a presence in each of the towns and try to make sure that everybody has the chance to access us and be heard from, the more towns I have, the more difficult it is for me to be somewhere. So if I go from 16 communities right now to 25, that means that's 9 more towns. I have to get to know their select boards. I have to get to know their school committee members. And you have to make that much more effort. So it has a negative effect.
Second Berkshire District State Representative Paul Mark. You can hear the full interview at WAMC.org. Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landis.
And a dispensary in the Hudson Valley is offering patients a new form of medical marijuana, the first raw cannabis product to be offered in New York. More from WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Dr. Stacia Woodcock is Assistant Director of Operations at Curaleaf New York.
This is the first actual flower-based medical cannabis product available in New York. So we're the first dispensary that's been able to bring this to market, and that's important for a couple of reasons. One is that it's cannabis in its most natural form, so minimal processing, all of the terpenes and cannabinoids are still intact. It's the actual natural plant material, but it's still processed in a way so that it's free of any pesticides or contaminants, so it's safe for the patient.
The ground flower pods were first sold in Curaleaf's Long Island dispensary and are now available at the Newburgh location. Woodcock says the ground flower is cost-effective.
So So when we look at the ground flower, patients are receiving 700 milligrams of active cannabinoids for a cost of $55. And so that's almost double the amount of cannabinoids that are getting they would be able to get from an average vape pen that would cost anywhere from $55 to $80, depending on what percentage it is. So it's a pretty significant cost difference in the amount of cannabinoids that they're able to receive for the price.
With an epidemic of vaping-related illnesses across the country, the State Department of Health urges all New Yorkers to stop using vape products until the definitive cause of reported vaping-associated lung illnesses nationwide can be better determined. Since the investigation into the illnesses began, there have been no reports of such illnesses associated with approved products in New York's medical marijuana program. Yet, out of an abundance of caution, as worded on the Department of Health's website, quote, "We are also urging patients in the medical marijuana program to consult with their health care providers on potential alternatives to vaping products while the investigation continues," end quote. Again, Woodcock.
That's sort of where the ground flower is such an advantage for patients, because up until now, the only option for a flower-based product was to obtain it illegally, whether it's through the illicit market or traveling to a different state and transporting it illegally across state lines. So this is the first opportunity for patients to have a safe, regulated flower-based product within the legal medical program.
Current health concerns pertain mainly to handheld vape pens, which include excipients or fillers. Curaleaf ground flower pods can only be used in tabletop vaporizers, which are heated below combustion and do not require any additives or excipients. Therefore, patients are solely inhaling cannabis flower in its raw form. Curaleaf does offer a variety of vapes, and since the vaping epidemic came to light, Woodcock notices one difference among patients.
You know, I think patients are asking a lot of questions, and once we explain the difference between the illicit vapes and the harmful substances that are put in them and the way that the medical cannabis vapes are regulated and what we don't put in them, they find it very reassuring, and that's part of the trust that we establish with our patients. So really, once we have that conversation, they seem very confident to move forward with their medication if that's the dosage form that works best for them.
Meantime, Woodcock says another new product is in the works.
We're also in the process of rolling out a chewable form of medication, our Cura-Chews. So we have those in formulation right now that we're working on bringing to market.
The ground flower pods will soon be available in Curaleaf's other New York locations, Plattsburgh and Queens. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.